how it actually happened, but it wasn't by some grand decree. It's like trying to explain why nobody saw it once everyone started to see that the world was much smaller than ever before. And over there wasn't so far anymore. What we did unto others washed up on our shore. The answer was hard to ignore. The end of
Good evening and welcome to Peace Talk, a production by the Juneau Chapter of Veterans for Peace for K2 Radio's Focus on Community. This is VFP's contribution to our community's ongoing conversation about war and peace and the important issues and questions they raise in our society and around the world. I'm Rich Moniak. I'm your host for tonight's program. With me in the studio is Paul DeSluver. We'll be talking about the events this weekend, the rally that VFP and the Juneau People for Peace and Justice sponsored and organized, we had it on Saturday on a beautiful sunny day in September. We had only about 30 people show up. What we're going to do is Rosemary Alexander was there to report on the story, and she was so kind as to give us a recording of the entire event. So we're going to play that back. It's going to be in sort of in two parts. This first part will begin with myself opening up the program, and I'll be followed by Beth Gertula, and actually I think I introduced Beth in that, and Linda Buckley. So why don't we jump right into that recording right now? Thanks.
Thanks to everybody for taking a little time out of a beautiful sunny day. It's typical sunny day in September in Juneau. This is an important day for the peace movement. Nationally, the peace movement's been a little bit re-energized by the prospect of the United States' threats to bomb Syria. And we're not here just to demonstrate our opposition to doing that, to bombing Syria. We're here to thank a few people. We're here to thank Don Young for standing up against this action, standing against his own party's leaders. We're here to thank Mark Baggage for putting enough conditions on what it would take for him to vote for an act of war. And even though Lisa Murkowski is on the fence on this, her hesitation also contributed to slowing down the war-making machine. So we want to thank Lisa Murkowski. So we're also here to celebrate the possibility of a solution better than bombs. Now, a lot of us have heard President Obama say that his big stick, his threat of military action, is what brought Syria to the table. But I beg to differ a little bit. President Obama initially indicated he wasn't going to get Congress's approval for this act. And that's when the peace movement stood up first in this country, and Congress started hearing the voices of the people. And the people have said, we don't want a war. We're tired of war. Congress knows the American people are weary of war. So I think we owe a thanks to the national peace movement for recognizing the importance of standing up one more time. So I don't have a whole lot else to say. I do want to read a poem along that theme of being wary about war. It was written by Rachel Bentham from England. She's a novelist, and it's called War, the Concise Version. And it goes, contention between people. This is how we begin. Specific conflicts, armed hostilities. The art of war. It's certainly not a science, is it? But doesn't art create strategies and tactics? Been in the wars? War baby, war bride, war crime. That which violates international laws of war, as if laws are effective in wartime. War cry, war attrition, war of nerves, war grave, war weary just hearing the words. So with that, I'd like to bring up our special speaker here today. Beth doesn't need any introduction, but she does also deserve a thanks because she's been with us repeatedly through these years in protest of the Iraq War. She was with us on the Capitol steps on President's Day when we made a plea for peace, and she was with us in Centennial Hall when we had a event about nuclear disarmament. And if you want to know why Beth is committed to that cause, she's got a personal story I'm sure she'll hear with you. So here's Beth.
So thank you for asking me to be here today. I feel humbled because each of you has wonderful reasons for being here, and it's an honor to represent all of you and to be here. And yes, I do have a wonderful story about why I'm against nuclear arms. My mother, Joyce, was the first woman to see the atomic bomb explode. She worked at Los Alamos and was on site, and she's gone through 3 rounds of cancer, and I can't help but believe that that's because she was so heavily radiated. But my mother survived. So many people died in the terrible bombings and because of radiation sickness, the atomic vets, who I'm sure you all know of. But in thinking about today, when KJ first emailed me, and he's always like a conscience for me, when he asks me to do something, I have to do it. But I have to admit, I stopped and I thought for a few minutes because I don't like sarin. I don't like gassing people and killing children and people. And so I thought about it for a few minutes. And then I realized, you know, you have to be against this. You have to be against aggression. You have to be against war. And no matter why the cause, and that's why I was really happy when I found this quote by Gandhi. And it really sort of says how I feel about it. What he said was, "What difference does it make to the dead, the orphans, and the homeless, whether the mad destruction is wrought under the name of totalitarianism or the holy name of liberty and democracy?" And that says it to me. It's not going to matter. You know, if we go and we kill innocent people, it's not going to matter that we did it for the right cause. They're still going to be dead. And I think about the troops. I think about the young men and women that I sit next to. I think about the young man I just saw in uniform getting on a plane a couple weeks ago, and a couple of women who I don't know at all were behind me, and every one of us just gasped because he looked like he was 15 years old. And we just gasped at how young he looked going away from his home and going off to Afghanistan or the Middle East or wherever he was going. So I am really glad to see the negotiations. I'm going to misquote Churchill, but I think what he said, it's better to jaw, jaw, jaw than fight, fight, fight. And I think as long as you're at the table and you're talking and you're trying, that is a good sign. I don't know how this all came about. I mean, I kind of wonder whether maybe the president helped start the talks in reality, and it wasn't first from Russia, but I don't think that matters. I think what matters is that we don't go to war. So thank you very much for being here today and for letting me speak, because it's a real honor to get to speak up against war. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Now, Linda, who led us in song along the highway with all the highway noise, is going to come up and sing something special for us, too. So.
Hi. You guys did great, by the way. I dusted this guitar off. I was telling somebody I learned to play this guitar in 1970 when I was pregnant with my son Jimmy, who is 43 and in the Army. So this is his 10th year in the military, and I told him I was going to be doing this today, and, you know, did I have his support? And he said that, you know, I called him actually on 911, and he said the flags are at half mast, and he said everyone I'm talking to is exhausted of war, and, you know, we'd like to change the equation and be peacemakers. And there's who was saying that we had the Navy clean up the plastic in the oceans, and we had, you know, all of these trained men and women, you know, doing a lot of, there's incredible jobs. It's not like there'd be any shortage of things for them to do to rebuild after floods and fires, and, you know, it goes on and on. So I when I talked on the radio, I was surprised that all the songs of the 60s are still absolutely appropriate today. It doesn't matter. It's just like we're singing these songs of peace. And you know the song that I sing in every occasion, and I'm just going to sing it here because it's nice that it's not a memorial, even though a lot of our dear friends have passed away in the last week and 10 days, is Amazing Grace, because I really do think it requires grace and a lot of faith, you know, to change something that's been in our history forever and ever, is that we resolve conflicts. It starts, I mean, you see it on the playground. It's crazy, you know, like somebody hits a kid and he hits him back. He doesn't say, let's sit down and negotiate about this, even though the teachers try to encourage that. So I'll sing a verse and then we can all sing together. And I usually switch the, I know that the guy that wrote the song was talking about him being a wretch because of slavery, but I've changed that to just that saved someone like me, so we don't all have to be wretched when we sing the song. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved someone like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. So if we can all sing that together. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved someone like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. So a new way of seeing, a new way. I hope that we can no longer be lost in this way of thinking. So thanks, everybody. The sun's great, isn't it?
Thanks, Linda. Now, we're going to have an open mic for anybody who wants to come up and add a few words in support of what we're doing here today. So,
well, you just heard the beautiful voice of Linda Buckley singing Amazing Grace at our Better Than Bombs rally in our action against opposing the action proposed for Syria, the bombing of Syria that President Obama was considering. You also heard Beth Kertula talk. That we will get back to the open mic portion in just a few moments. I want to announce the names of who those people were who will be making those comments in a minute. But, Paul, what did you think of this rally compared to others that you've been to?
Well, of course, the attendance was very small compared to, say, prior to the Iraq War, when we had 1,500 people march across the bridge opposing that war, which turned out to be futile, of course. And I think there are a number of reasons for that. One, you mentioned it was a beautiful sunny day in the middle of September in Juneau. And so probably, honestly, if I hadn't been part of helping to promote and arrange this demonstration, I may have gone up the mountain myself that day. But so I think a lot had to do with weather. There were a lot of things going on. A lot of people wanted to do other things, be on the water, on the trails, up the mountains, and I certainly couldn't blame them on a day like that. Another reason, I believe, was the fact that there is in the works this brokered deal, brokered by Russia, to take control of Syria's chemical weapons. And I think a lot of people are putting a lot of hope in that, like I am. And so I think that was another reason it sort of took the wind out of the sails for that kind of demonstration. And then a third thing I think that's probably relevant is the fact that most people who are in tune with what's going on are aware that the majority of our members of Congress are opposed to this action in Syria. And so they, whether it be accurate or not, they think it's a safe bet that we won't bomb Syria, even though President Obama has said continually that it's, you know, still an option that he holds open. But I think people are a little bit lulled into a sense of, you know, we've done this before a number of occasions, and certainly we aren't going to do this sort of thing again, I'm sure, which, you know, I don't have much faith in that, really. I expected, when President Obama was elected, I expected him to take a significantly different tact on the issues of war and peace than he has. And I've been, you know, surprised and at times even angered by that. So while I think that, you know, there's still a lot of concern, but from the general public about this, there are a number of issues that have kind of caused them to be complacent or quiet.
Well, and I might add a fourth reason that people didn't come. I don't think, as compared to Iraq in 2002-2003, the imperative nature of this action that was Obama was considering is not nearly as drastic as what Bush and Cheney were proposing. I mean, a targeted strike is against Syria is far from an invasion of a sovereign country, and it's more on the lines of what we did with Libya, and there wasn't a lot of outcry in our action against Libya a few years ago. But I think you're right. I think the weather, I think the sense of hope and the sense that it's taken care of may have let people feel no reason that they had to be there. And so I wasn't disappointed in it. I think we did what we needed to do. I think it was the peace movement around the country did stand up. It was somewhat revitalized after this, and I think a lot of people are confused by President Obama's position on this. I think they've there's a lot of flashback to the issues of the intelligence, whether we should trust it or not, whether we should trust the government. Even Congress isn't seeing the intelligence. I read a piece by Alan Grayson in the New York Times, and he just blasted the administration. He's a Democrat. He blasted the administration and suggested they haven't seen anything and that there's evidence out there that they, too, have cherry-picked the intelligence. So there's disappointment, but I think the surprise that we're going to we're negotiating with the Russians gives us all a lot of hope, and I think we need to hold on to that, but we also need to remain alert and see where it goes. We need to pay attention.
Yeah, I think it's very important, because even though the scale and the scope of what happened in Iraq isn't what the president is proposing here in Syria, there's really no way of knowing what would eventually happen if we targeted certain areas in Iraq, or excuse me, in Syria. And I mean, I'm no expert on this, but I've read quite a bit. I've listened to a lot of the experts, and most of them have said that, you know, an initial bombing of Syria could and lead to something significantly different than what the president envisions and what Americans think will happen. And I think history has shown over and over again that, except for maybe Libya, that's generally the case.
Well, history has shown over and over again that war is unpredictable.
Completely unpredictable.
Yeah. So, well, with that, let's listen to Judith Meyer came up to the mic, and Mark Miller and Dixie Hood all had comments to make at our rally, Better for Bombs, Better than Bombs rally on Saturday.
It's great to see old friends, and it's also great to see another generation coming on to take care of our world for us. And that's you, little one. And it's also great to have our girl from Yemen here. Maha, come by me, please. You can bring your sign. This gives me a lot of courage. This is Maha Abdulrazak. She is a student at Thunder Mountain. She's here with her host, Mama. Suzanne Haight, and with new friends even from today. Yes? Alex. And always a smile, I think. I don't know if I have permission to say this, but she told me, and I'm going to quote it. After our meeting on Monday night, on the way home, she said, "Everybody in Yemen thinks Americans are mean, and now I know that many people care about the Middle East." This is the work we have to do. And it's not the 1,500 people we had crossing the Juno Douglas Bridge before we went to war in Iraq. But we're here, and we have a voice, and we have friends, and we can do it. We have to do it. And I think this is an opportunity with other nations saying that they can help with diplomacy. And in 1992, when I came back from teaching in the Soviet Union, which turned into Russia before I left there, I came home with this poster. Peace to planet Earth. And thank you to the Russians who said they could help with diplomacy. And thank you to the Japanese people who've had the courage to go on and fold cranes and march and say, never again, nuclear war. It's our job to get rid of all the weapons of mass destruction on this planet. None of us need any of them. And this is an opportunity that we need to take and say, now is the time. Let's get rid of all of them. So, I think we have our work to do.
Thanks, Judy. Does anybody else want to come up and say a few words?
Hi, I was very encouraged over the last couple of weeks to keep hearing that almost the entire world has voted now or agreed to ban chemical weapons. And there's been some graphic images in the news showing the horrible effects of these weapons. And I think banning chemical weapons is a very good start. And research indicates that bombs seem to do kind of the same damage of chemical weapons or worse. So maybe banning chemical weapons can be a good start, and the next thing we can ban is bombs. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark. Is there anybody else but Dixie?
I heard Noam Chomsky on the Democracy Now! Program the other day, and he said that the 100-year-ago, whenever it was, ban on chemical weapons worldwide includes anybody that has them, and that Israel has a huge supply, as well as a huge number of nuclear bombs, and there shouldn't be selective enforcement about these weapons of mass destruction. And I think that some of the political stances that our government and the Congress take are not appropriate in terms of the issues around Israel.
Thanks, Dixie. Anybody else? So I guess that concludes our little demonstration today. And again, thanks for coming out on a beautiful sunny day, and enjoy the rest of it and the rest of the summer. Thanks.
Well, you just heard a few speakers from our Better Than Bombs rally from Saturday that VFP and Juno People for Peace and Justice organized. I just wanted to explain a little bit the mention of the girl from Yemen. that Judith Meyer talked about. If you've listened to this program before and if you've been paying attention to some of JPBJ's work, Maha is from Yemen. She is a YES student here on a scholarship funded by the State Department. It's part of the effort by the State Department that began back in 2003 to bring Muslim students to the United States to study and share their culture, learn our culture, and hopefully build a world that as Mark Miller said, might not have any more bombs. And Dixie Hood's remarks about the United States, not playing or not trying to enforce the rules across the world, particularly in terms of Israel. I think Judith referred to, getting rid of all weapons of mass destruction. Israel needs to step up to the table and do the same thing that Syria is doing right now with their nuclear weapons. First, they have to declare they have them. Everybody knows they do, but they kind of refuse to admit it. But as long as Israel has that kind of power in the Middle East, there's a great imbalance that prevents. And we heard that in the show last month from Robert Jensen. There's a great power imbalance that really stalls any of the negotiations going on in the Middle East. You got any thoughts on the rest of the rally that we had, Paul?
Well, it's, even though the attendance wasn't significant, it's always important on issues such as this to stand up and publicly announce where you are and how you feel and what you would like to see happen. So even though it was small by any measure, I think it was uplifting in a lot of ways. And people who didn't participate, particularly tourists who were standing around on the fringes watching, I saw a number of people who were shaking their head in agreement, both with the speakers and just the overall tone. And so that's important. I mean, you're conveying a message to people who aren't actively involved or part of the group, but, certainly have similar feelings to a lot of us that were there. So it's always a good thing to do that. It's never a negative, in my view.
Well, several years ago, during the middle of the Iraq War, VFP was, of course, very involved in demonstrations and in quite a few different types of demonstrations on the streets. There was an art contest that we held. There's been the VFP has been doing a scholarship every year since VFP was formed here. But in 2005 or 6, I believe, they also produced an audio CD with Alaskans singing songs about peace and against the war. And we're going to play one of those right now, The War Machine by Burl Sheldon and Friends. Thank you.
you're going and we know where you've been. Double speak, slinging mud. You fill our tanks with blood. Repress if you've got the bread. Oh, say, can you see the rocket's red glare bursting in your head? Bang, your democracy's dead. We've got smart bombs and foolish leaders, masters of spin. Smart bombs and foolish leaders, what a fix we're in. Red blood flows on a wasted land. Black gold oozes from the sand. Bow down or fall down, barks the queen. Omnipotent war machine. Omnipotent war machine. Omnipotent war machine. Omnipotent war machine.
You're listening to Peace Talk on KTOO FM in Juneau. This is Rich Moniak with Paul DeSilver here in the studio. We just heard Burl Sheldon and Friends, the War Machine. And, you know, the War Machine that Obama inherited has grown immensely since he took office. That we still continue to spend trillions or billions on military on our military and on Homeland Security. Obama ran a little bit as a peace president. I mean, he opposed the war in Iraq back in 2003. His actions in Afghanistan were predictable, but you know, Time magazine called him the reluctant warrior. And how would you? We both talked about being disappointed in him to some degree. What do you think he's really thinking at this point in time?
Well, first of all, the military-industrial complex in this country is massive, has a lot of power and a lot of sway. And I think it's probably very difficult for any president of any party to do what they had hoped or intended to do before they were elected. And you know, there's our armaments are such a big part of our economy, and you know, a lot of both military and civilian people involved with that are just itching, I believe, to try some of these things out, to see how they work, and because they've invested so much, you know, time and energy and money into these things, and so I think it's very difficult for any president to have that to stare down. And, you know, I'm disappointed in President Obama for a number of things that he's done in that regard since he's been in. In fact, soon after he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, our VFP group were recognizing the anniversary of the Iraq War on the Capitol steps downtown, and the sign that I brought to that event and also took with me last Saturday was one that says, President Obama, earn your Nobel Peace Prize, stop the wars, and don't start any more. And I pretty much still feel that way. I'm very nervous that he won't do as I would like him to do in that regard. And like I said, I think once you're in that seat, it's really tough to stare down the powers out there and say, I'm not going to do this. Because they can make a really good argument for why we should, say, bomb Syria. And I imagine it's a very difficult decision for any president. much more difficult for him than for me sitting at home to make that kind of decision.
Well, if we're entitled to imagine that the peace movement made a difference this time, that enough people did reach Congress, then it's also probably true that if we think President Obama has let us down, that we've possibly let him down, that he actually needs a stronger base of people opposing the things that he would have liked to not do. I mean, he may have wanted to get out of Afghanistan sooner. He may have wanted to get out of Iraq sooner. If he is a reluctant warrior, if he didn't do anything the first time, he didn't propose anything the first time Syria supposedly used chemical weapons. He had his back against the wall a little bit with his red line remark, but he still seems reluctant to carry anything out. And sure, I think you're right. It's definitely true that nobody in that office can do it by themselves. They can't take on the military-industrial complex. They can't take on a very, any of the neocon right-wing elements in our society that think we need to reshape the world using our military. They can't do it alone, and they need people. You know, the president needs people. And when in 2008, when he was elected into the White House, a lot of the peace movement went silent. So in a large way, I think we've let him down.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Although on this issue of Syria, I mean, I think it's probably 85% of the American public are opposed to any involvement in Syria. So he's, you know, the American public is there saying we don't want to do this. And for me, it's a unique situation in nearly 40 years in Alaska. I think this might be the first and only time that Congressman Don Young and I have agreed on an issue. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, that was my first thought. The first thing I said at the rally was to thank him, and I think we do owe him a thanks. I mean, it's not when we can agree to disagree on a lot of things. That's what makes our democracy work. We don't fight over that stuff. But when, regardless of the party affiliation, when somebody takes a position that's important to us, that's with us, we need to recognize that. I think, going back to the election in 2012, you know, Ron Paul was the only real peace candidate, you know, a libertarian that most people in who think of themselves as liberals would not want to see anywhere near the White House. But to listen to his message on bringing troops home from overseas and to taking the military complex and whittling it down to a size that would only be defending our shores, you know, those are good things, and we need to align ourselves with people who support similar positions, regardless of what side of the political party they sit on.
Right. Well, a lot of people, not only in Juneau but nationally, believe that Veterans for Peace is a very partisan group. And they can be on some issues, but on the issue of war and peace, although even in our own small group here in Juneau, we do have varying degrees of differences on how we should approach things. But generally speaking, it doesn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat proposing that we go to war. We're going to be opposed to it because that's part of who we are. It's a large part of who we are. It's, okay, this use diplomacy rather than bombs, and let's figure out a way that we can accomplish that. And you can't accomplish that if the bombs start flying first. It may take longer. You may have to give up some things that you don't want to give up. But in the end, it's going to be better for our whole society.
Yeah, and Veterans for Peace has, you know, one of the most controversial issues we've dealt with as a group was the resolution calling for President Obama's impeachment. You know, a lot of people in the organization felt that was that stepped over the wrong line, and a lot of people in the organization felt that was being nonpartisan because a resolution was passed calling for the impeachment of George Bush. It is a difficult thing to balance. I think, you know, personally, I've seen VFP support peace candidates first, regardless of party. It just so happens that most of the candidates that are advocating peaceful solutions tend to be on the left side, of the progressive side of the Democratic Party. That's not even a majority of the Democratic Party.
Right.
So we got our work cut out for us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we always will. Well, let's take another little break and listen to another song from the Wounded Dove CD. This one is called One Thing I Know by Tony Tings.
Of liberty in your pocket. You can make it shine throughout the night. When it comes to freedom, you gotta rock it. You gotta hold it to the light. Peace is a good idea. It's the best one yet. But you're never gonna find it in your TV set. Never mind those wishes on some star. Dreams without action won't get us far. One thing I know, and I know it well, peace doesn't come from a wishing well. One thing I know, and I know it well, peace doesn't come from a wishing well. One thing I know, and I know it well, peace doesn't come from a wishing, from a wishing.
So that was Tony Tang's One Thing I Know from the Wounded Dove CD produced by Veterans for Peace. Going back to the situation with Syria, right now what we're hoping to see, there was an agreement reached on Saturday for Syria to destroy all their chemical weapons. They're still working out the details. The United States still has the possibility of a strike on the table. They want to see action from Syria before they take that off. Today, the UN released their report definitely concluded sarin gas was used. The implications are that it came from the Syrian government. However, the UN's not the either in general when they do these things, or this particular investigative body was not tasked with assigning blame. And personally, I think that's a fitting requirement of an investigation. I think the United States should listen and learn something from this. The reason why I don't think the investigator should be placing blame is that's not the role of the investigators in any criminal investigation. Theirs is to provide the evidence, to provide the arguments, and to turn it over to a prosecutor and find out whether there's enough evidence. You know, and from there, of course, if there was, you would indict the offender, you would take him to court, and that individual, in this case, President Assad from Syria, would have his day in court to defend himself. Now, there's information out there that does refute or contradicts, if you will, some of the intelligence that the our national intelligence agencies has gathered. Most of the evidence is purely circumstantial. Human Rights Watch published a report over the weekend pointing a finger also at the Syrian government, but not directly at Assad. And there's elements in that believe that it may have been a renegade general who fired him. The Russians also sent a report on the first attack back in March that was 100 pages long, and their conclusion was that it came from rebels. So I don't have any inside information to any of this stuff. I don't pretend that I know. The whole point I want to make, Paul, is that I think bombing is not the right answer. I think the United States needs to support the International Criminal Court. Obviously, it's not going to turn the clock back and prevent this incident. But, you know, bombing is to convict and execute without a fair trial on the presumption of guilt based upon evidence collected by only us and seen by only us.
Well, I mean, it's clear that although they claim these bombs are, quote, smart bombs, unquote, and there will be limited destruction, you don't really know, no one really knows where bombing is going to lead and who it might harm or kill or, you know, is it helping one side more or the other? It's really impossible to tell in a case like Syria. I mean, you have a civil war going on there right now. And because of that, that's going to be a tough, even a more difficult situation to have inspectors on the ground trying to ascertain whether or not what they have and where they have it and round it all up. It's going to be a very difficult situation. But what's interesting to me, too, about this whole situation in Syria is that as hard as the president has worked to convince the American public that we should go in and bomb because they have intelligence that shows that Assad used these weapons, the whole thing is tainted by what happened during or prior to the Iraq War and what was discovered during the Iraq War, the fact that they didn't have weapons of mass destruction, as President Bush had claimed over and over again. And so Americans, fortunately, are not as willing anymore to just simply buy what a president's saying about what another country may or may not have as far as weaponry. And they're not going to be as easily convinced as they were that time. And particularly, you know, congressmen and women are not going to be as easily convinced. And that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I mentioned Alan Grayson taking the position before that, and he's been pretty clear that Congress hasn't seen the intelligence. They've seen a brief summaries of the intelligence. There was a group of former intelligence officers, about a dozen of them, that wrote to President Obama, and their report was read by Grayson. He mentioned it in the New York Times article. It was by a man by I've got it here somewhere. It's Giraldi, I believe, is his name. Anyways, it on the American Conservative website, he goes into a lot of detail of information they've gathered from intelligence officers they're still in contact with, from doing analysis that they were all trained to do, and there's a lot of information there that contradicts some of the president's and John Kerry's, Secretary of State Kerry's, statements about this. Again, I don't pretend to have the answer to it, but with all these questions out there, it's as you say, you know, memories of what happened in Iraq, I think it's ripe to question this stuff. I think we need to question this stuff. I don't think our intelligence agencies are up for the job. They're not on the ground the way they used to be. So, you know, we need to, if Americans are going to take our intelligence as gospel or better, we're going to allow our presidents to do anything they want with it.
Yeah, and I think probably President Obama was thinking and feeling some of those same things when he, at the last moment, according to what I read, decided to go to Congress and ask them for approval, an up or down vote on this issue of bombing Syria. And I'm sure that in the back of his mind he was thinking about what had transpired with Iraq and what he had said about Iraq and whether or not he could trust the intelligence that was put in front of him. And, you know, I think that everyone is a little bit not only leery but skeptical of any of that information anymore. And like I say, that's a good thing in my view.
Well, and as I was saying, I don't think bombing is the answer, you know, and I think with that we'll end our little discussion here, and we'll listen to Bread by Pat Henry, and he'll tell us why bombing is bad.
Yes, he will.
Guided missiles at you with a big bomb in the nose. You ain't seen no fireworks, baby, till you set off one of those. We'll drop smart bombs right at you with a laser gun. We will guide them up your ass. We will guide them up your nose. We'll keep bombing you all night till our planes run out of gas. Then they'll go back for a refill, and when morning comes at last, we'll drop bread. We'll drop bread. We'll drop bread on your head, on your head, on your head, on your head. Drop bread. You should be grateful for the food, you know you should. You should be grateful for the food, you know it's good. You should be grateful for the bread. Unless, of course, you're dead. When we drop bread, in the next day, blown out markets. There'll be billions for your defense, there'll be billions for your pockets. We'll drop bread, we'll drop bread, we'll drop big bread, big bread, big bread on your head. We'll drop bread. Should be grateful for the food, you know you should. You should be grateful for the food, you know it's good. You should be grateful for the bread, unless of course you're dead.
That was Pat Henry singing Bread, produced by from the CD produced by VFP, Wounded Dove. And the words to that song echo what Beth Kertula told us at the rally on Saturday. When bombs fall, innocent people are going to die. And she quoted Gandhi, it doesn't matter what the purpose is for, whether it's a dictator, a totalitarian state, or in the name of democracy. People die when we drop bombs. Innocent people, and VFP is trying to do what it can to prevent that. But for tonight, that wraps up our show, talking about the situation in Syria and the peace rally that VFP and JPPJ sponsored and organized last Saturday. I've got a couple of little announcements to make. One announcement and some thanks, I guess. Keep your eyes open for the Veterans for Peace Scholarship, which will be coming out in a week or so. The theme for the scholarship this year will be getting students to write essays around anti-war and peace music. I want to thank the people who helped put the event on this week. We had K.J. Metcalf, who was not there. K.J., as Beth indicated, was KJ asked Beth to speak, and she couldn't say no, so KJ brought us Beth. Linda Buckley not only helped organize a lot of things, but she sang and led the march all the way to the to Marine Park. We had Jane Ginter and Dixie Hood also helped organize it, and I want to thank Rosemary Alexander for giving us the recording. And John Kremer for helping with the manning the controls tonight, and Paul DeSluver for being with me in the audience. This is Peace Talk. You're on K2. Good night.
The end of war.